This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long at 545. Steve Geller will join us for our triple option feature. A little after 420, Aaron Coscarelli, who works for the Believe Network and is covering the L.A. Rams. And, man, for one of the few times, the Rams are actually on page one, so to speak, of the L.A. Times because of the Matthew Stafford situation and what will happen there. Will he stay in L.A. maybe on a short-term deal, or will they find a trade partner to deal him off? This is a football team that has been in a reset since they won the Super Bowl. Got rid of a lot of aging players, tried to get much younger. Matthew Stafford, man, he could still sling it. And all I know is, in playoff time, that was one team that gave the Eagles problems. It was Matt Stafford and the Rams. And the Rams' young defense, you could afford him for 2 years. I don't know about going anything beyond that. So we'll get Aaron's take on that. And at 5:20, LSU baseball, we'll talk to Scott Sanders, former Major League Baseball pitcher, also covers the LSU Fighting Tigers. Big story today, certainly, out of Indianapolis. And all indications, Charlie, is that from Mickey Loomis talking to some of the press there, is that there are plans to try to make this work out with Derek Carr for 2025 and a restructuring of his contract. Now, we've talked about this before. The devil's all in the details of one way or another, you're going to have to swallow the money with Derek Carr. It's a huge contract. There is no easy way out of this. And we've went through the different scenarios about getting rid of him, going with a June 1st type post release of Carr. I couldn't see any team really giving up anything for Carr. Their deal is that contract's yours. I'll deal with Carr myself if he gets cut loose, or you try to restructure. And it looks as though that they are in that mode of trying to restructure Derek Carr's contract. My thing is, tell me what it's going to hit in 2026, because that could inflate that salary cap hit even bigger if it's a total restructure of that contract. Again, devil's in the details of every contract, but it looks as though they are trying to work out a deal that Derek Carr would stay in New Orleans for 2025. And for Saints fans, I know that's going to be not the very positive news for, I would say, 85 to 90% of them.
ESPN's Catherine Terrell has a story about this, Mike, and it's got a lot of great information in it. Loomis said, quote, "I think we feel like we've got a guy we can win with," about Derek Carr, said they're, quote unquote, excited about it. And then we all talked and we went through this ad nauseum about Kellen Moore's comments at his presser about Derek Carr and how he was very noncommittal about it. But Moore also said, quote, "We feel fortunate to have Derek here, the experience he has. He's a big-time quarterback in this league," end quote. And here's the money aspect of it, Mike, because you brought it up. Right now, Derek Carr's cap hit $51.4 million for the 2025-26 season. Now, a restructure is really the only way I think they can make it work at this point because they are over the cap by such a heavy degree. And they want to also...
It's the easiest way, probably.
Yes.
It's the best way to say it.
However... here's the issue, and Kat Terrell details this in her story. The Saints could free up almost $31 million in cap space this year, which still wouldn't get them into the positive, which is kind of very telling.
But you're working your way there.
You're working your way there. However, via Terrell, a full restructure would make Carr's 2026 salary cap number about $69 million in the final year of his deal. I don't see any way that that's possible to work out.
No, you something's got to be done financially to kind of work your way out of this. And again, you're going to have to take your medicine one way or another financially with this. And again, you can get kind of hard-headed about, I am so hell-bent to make this work. I'll do what I have to do. I have a friend of mine who I do a show with every 2 weeks in Chicago, and he says this is so reminiscent of them in front office trying to sell the Bears and Bears fans on Mitchell Trubisky. Now, the difference is Trubisky was on a rookie deal, but he said, you know what that all got us? They all got him fired because Trubisky wasn't the answer to Chicago, and then now they got another young quarterback there, Caleb Williams. But, Charlie, financially, this is goes down one of the worst deals in the National Football League. The way this is set up, and could be even worsening the situation if it's a total restructure. And now you got $69 million next year?
For what it's worth, it is a boost. Let's be honest there. But his cap hit on the current contract for next year, Mike, for the 2026 season, would already be $61 million. It just feels like there's got to be a point where you
say enough's enough.
You realize that this isn't, you know, going to work out the way that they intended when they signed him. So a couple things about, you know, if they were to cut him pre and post June 1st. Post June 1st, if you can't find a trade for him, if you cut him, the dead money that you would eat for the 2025 season is $21 million. But there's a cap saving of $30 million in that scenario. Now, the one thing that you have with pre and post June 1st, you only have two cuts that you can do post June 1st. And one of them is going to be Ryan Ramczyk because he's going to retire in the offseason. But Derek Carr seems like the logical one to also move on from. Mike, you've been saying it for weeks now that if he's not your future, you got to figure out something different at the quarterback position. You know, take your medicine and move on. But via what Loomis and Kellen Moore have both said at Indianapolis ahead of the NFL Combine, it does not seem like the Saints are going to do that.
And it doesn't matter if he's the best quarterback you think on the roster. Is he worth the money? Okay, you can go to a car dealership and I want a certain vehicle, but it's way out of my price range. But I want it so bad I'm willing to pay for it. And then I'm stuck with the payments afterwards. Okay, so I agree with a lot of people that, look, right now, from what we've seen, yes, he's the best quarterback on your roster, but at that price, you're going to come down to a reality check somewhere along the line where money does play a difference, plays a big difference. The Giants gave all kind of money to Daniel Jones, and they cut him loose. He was not the guy for them. They moved off of Daniel Jones and took a big hit financially because of it.
So, Mike, via SpotTrack, the highest cap hits for the 2025 season right now, Dak Prescott's number one by a pretty wide margin.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson's number two. Deshaun Watson's
contract is an
absolute nightmare. And we're talking about how this Derek Carr contract is something that's been a mistake. Deshaun Watson's even worse. Pat Mahomes is at number three. Derek Carr at number four. That $51.4 million cap hit. Now, a restructure is likely going to happen, and it won't be that bad. However, that's where you're sitting at right now with Derek Carr.
But eventually, at the end of the day, he's still getting paid money.
Absolutely.
He's not taking a pay cut. This is just restructuring financially for you as a team.
Yeah.
because they got people that think, oh, well, he's going to take the pay cut. No, he's getting his money one way or another. It's a restructuring of how you put it on the books. And there's where the devil in the details come into play. And we'll have to wait and see once all this is worked out exactly the details of what it would look like for 2026. Because you don't want to be staring at the exact same sort of situation.
Even worse situation.
Or worse for next year. But again, put yourself in that spot. When we come back, we'll have on with us Aaron Coscarelli. Aaron covers the L.A. Rams, and man, they got hot news there on the quarterback situation, certainly with Matthew Stafford. What's going to happen with the Rams, a team still transitioning a couple years after winning a Super Bowl, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's. So thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line. She covers the L.A. Rams for the Believe Podcast Network, Aaron Coscarelli. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us. Aaron, no matter where you go, you know, one thing my partner Bobby Abear always says, quarterbacks trump everything. And he's right about that. No matter where, the talk is about a quarterback. Either you got one or you're looking for one. In L.A., it looks as though either trying to make a short-term deal with Matt Stafford work, maybe a 2-year deal, or it looks as though that they are serious in trade talks to possibly deal Matt Stafford off. And it would look to be, to me, looking out there, would the Raiders be the destination spot for Stafford if he's traded?
Right. Of course. Hi, you guys. First of all, thank you for having me on. It has been a week so far for the Rams and Stafford and all the talk about where would he go and why would he leave. And I'm assuming you're talking about the report that's been out, has been released within the last couple of hours, where Tom Brady, the minority owner for the Raiders, hosted Stafford at his house in Montana. I'm assuming that's what you're referring to, yeah?
Yeah, just coincidental. They're in the same place, same time. Come on.
Right.
I do know lightning does strike twice. I'm a Bayou guy, and I've seen it numerous. But that's not a lightning strike twice. That is sort of a planned deal. But I can always say, it just happenstance.
Yeah. They just bumped into each other, you know, at the ski lodge, and Stafford happened to be there. You know, look, is there truth to it? Yes, of course, obviously. And the thing that was really interesting that we've been talking about is if all things are good, why would the Rams allow for Stafford to meet with other teams? And it was something that we talked about. If you're open to letting your quarterback potentially meet with other people, What are you saying about your quarterback? And one of the things that was very interesting on Monday, Peter Schrager from GMFB has a very good relationship with Sean McVay. And what he said on the show, on their national show, and here's my question for you guys, because it's something I've been pondering since he released it, since Schrager has a good relationship with McVay, okay, and he's going out and speaking and vocalizing that they will not give him a pay bump. They gave Stafford a pay bump last year. Schrager is saying the Rams will not give him a pay bump. Now, if you're Stafford and Stafford's team, how do you process that, right? You hear when somebody says that as like is it a message to Stafford? And by the way, if it is, how do you come back from that?
You don't. So, you don't come back from it. That my thing is, I agree with you, Aaron. Every indication would seem to be that they are moving off of Stafford, trying to find the right deal for him. I think, you know, you could make it accommodable for him if he's looking for around $50 million a year on a short-term deal. You're not really paying anybody else. You got a really young roster. You could afford to
That's
do
right.
it. But this seems to be almost, if they're allowing you to go talk to other teams and other executives with other teams, they want you to move on.
Well, so here's the thing, right? Okay, Stafford's 37. He just turned 37 in February, right? He's, I think, a two-time Pro Bowler. He's already won the Super Bowl. He's not the most mobile guy. But when you think about it big picture, a lot of it just doesn't really make sense. Now, I think the Raiders make the most sense.
Yes.
If you're just talking to me as a person who is very familiar with the Rams, you know, Stafford has four daughters. You know, his wife lives here. You know, they live here in L.A. They have a very comfortable. Do I see Stafford going to the Giants? No. They have offensive line issues. Why would he go to the New York media? Okay, so that sounds like a no. Potentially, maybe the Steelers, but why would he go to the Browns? Does Stafford really want to go to an organization where there's a rebuild at 37?
No.
When there's this very gorgeous little opportunity where the Rams are still a contender. And like you said, you know, they're on the up and up with what they've been able to do in terms of their defense, right? Filling the void of Aaron Donald. Jared Verse just won Defensive Rookie of the Year. So it doesn't make sense to me why Stafford would leave just for a pay bump. I mean, the guy's made, what, $400 million over the course of his year, over his career. I'm baffled by it. But I think the Rams are smart because they know, look, it's Sean McVay. If he can revive Baker's career, maybe they give Jimmy G $10 million and he leads the way.
Okay. The other part of this is there's been a lot of kind of connect the dots that if he were traded, that Aaron Rodgers come in now. You know, man, if y'all don't have anything to talk about, y'all sure will if that scenario does occur. What are you hearing on the possibility, if Stafford is dealt, that McVay, even in a short-term deal, bring in a guy like Aaron Rodgers to win for him?
Let's just be honest here. That would make the most sense. They could get Rodgers on a discount. He gets to maybe there's, you know, by the way, there's also all these crazy. This is why I love it right now. I mean, even though we don't have football on our TVs, we have the football gossip gods. So I saw a graphic yesterday that maybe they would deal Stafford and Cooper, right? And then you get Rodgers and Davante Adams in LA. Look, Rodgers wants to go out with a bang, and the best potential partner in that is a guy that does it very well, which is Sean McVay. And do I see that being probably the right fit, getting Rodgers on a discount? Yeah.
And Aaron, real quick, I just want to get your thoughts on the free agent quarterback market, because it really does feel like if they do trade him, the reason why is that there's not really many quarterbacks out there. Last year's quarterback class and the rookie scale was gigantic. It was fantastic. All the six quarterbacks that went in the top 12, and a lot of them have already performed at the NFL level. But when you're looking at this year's QB class, it's not great for rookies. But then also the pro market, you have Darnold, Justin Fields, Rodgers, as Mike had just mentioned, Russell Wilson, Kirk Cousins. They're not Matt Stafford. It's just not. It's a proven guy, a proven Super Bowl champ. And so if they were to move him, I think that, you know, the market could potentially be there. But you make a great point about fit. A lot of these teams that are quarterback needy, you know, why would he really go there in the first place?
The other thing, too, Aaron, is I would think about the draft. I told this to Charlie when we did our mock, because I knew last year that McVay had a lot of interest in Bo Nix. And I think he sort of publicly said, hey, listen, there are certain things there I really like about him and being able to run my offense. There's a guy this year that I think would be a nice fit there, Jackson Dart from Ole Miss. And, okay, you got him at football minimum wage for at least 4 years as a first-round pick quarterback. So you can address Charlie's question about the veteran situation. But if you had a lot of interest in Bo Nix, this was in the back of your mind last year.
That's right. Well, so here's the problem too, right? And Sean McVay went on the Fitz and Wit, Fitzpatrick and the Andrew Whitworth podcast, and I screen grabbed and reposted on my Instagram his soundbite. Sean McVay and the Rams are in a dicey situation. Why? Because more than half, I think heading into the season last year, they had the second youngest roster. So like you guys said, they've got a lot of young guys. They don't have to pay a lot of money. However, part of the roster is also aging. So you need to look for your heir apparent to, in the event you do keep Stafford. So you either keep Stafford for 2 years or you bring in a guy like a Rodgers on a discount who then sort of raises up your next, you know, whoever is behind the guy, right? You want to figure out your next signal caller, your future. And Lesney's done a very good job with the draft. I mean, he's been with the Rams since 2012. Look at Kyren Williams. Look at Puka. You know, so they are very savvy when it comes to financing. And I think that's their leverage. They realize people want to come to L.A. People want to work with Sean McVay. The Baker Mayfield experiment, he went to Tampa, made a gajillion dollars because of his deal and what he was able to do with the Rams for 1 year. So that's why this is all very interesting, because it's like, who's brokering who and does it end up working out? Why the Giants, it would make zero sense, is they're really not a Stafford away from winning. And really, neither are the Raiders. But if you're a football player, much like Saquon, you got to think about what's best for your family. It is a contact sport. It's a physical game. Stafford's 37. He's going to be 38 next year. I mean, I understand why these guys want to go to the most favorable contract or deal on the table. But one of the things that we've all been scratching our heads is, like, you're very comfortable in LA. Yes, you're not making the $50 million that all these other young quarterbacks are getting. He doesn't even crack the top nine. But, you know, all of this will, in due time, with combine, tomorrow, these are all answers that the Rams are trying to get in terms of clarity. And it just seems like there's something more that we're really not getting in tune with, which is, if it's just money, it just doesn't make sense to me.
I think there's something else. I agree with you, Aaron, exactly with that. The other thing is, people, if I'm the part of the Rams and I can only win a championship in the year I'm playing in, okay, that's the only time I can win one in my mind. Everybody's got a perception that the Eagles, they just basically steamrolled everybody after the regular season and did it on Super Bowl Sunday. I know one team that didn't steamroll the Rams. I mean, in that weather, you look how close, and Jalen Carter sort of took over the game at the end. But look at what happened in that game. You were that close to taking down the Eagles on their own home turf. That's why, 100. For me, it has to be something else other than cash money.
What exactly? That's exactly right. Like, who was the team that gave the Eagles the most fits? It certainly wasn't the Chiefs on Super Bowl Sunday by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, it seemed like Pat Mahomes was playing scared. I mean, it was like an unrecognizable team. And it just goes to show how physical. I mean, the Eagles, I forget what week it was. Was it week 14? They ran through us. It was right around Thanksgiving. I remember I was in New York at the time. And they readjusted. And then we played the Eagles again. And like you said, we were one pass, one play away from beating the Eagles, who then go on to win Super Bowl. So it's like the Rams are a win-now organization. They're in Los Angeles. He's got four daughters. He's got a wife. He's got a family. The only option that would make the most sense is making his family go to Vegas. And I could see that potentially happening with Carol, Chip Kelly there, Tom Brady, obviously. They could, like, I'm very curious to see how the Raiders are going to look in that division. But it could happen, and that's why right now is such a great time to be a football fan, because, like, there's so much speculation, and no one really knows the answers. But like I said, on Monday when Schrager said they're not going to give the Stafford a pay bump, that's inside information.
Yes.
Right from the mouth of Sean McVay. So guess what? Stafford's team, definitely listening to that.
The other thing is, there is no off season. If the NFL could somehow swing that schedule back and take it to the end of May, you'd have 1 month off, and then all of a sudden football click again in July. It's unbelievable how the NFL has tsunamied everything. And we're not even playing a game now. And yet when they start off, if it's Sports Talk with us or with you doing the podcast or Sports Center, what it's about, it's not about baseball coming around the corner. It's not about the NBA, not about college basketball. NFL, still king.
That's right. NFL is undefeated in media. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun covering the Rams this year. I grew up in LA, went to USC, finger is certainly on the pulse when it comes to all things in LA, but I would be very disappointed and bummed if Stafford ended up leaving, just based on how close they almost came last year. You know, they won the NFC title. They started the season 1-4. If there's a team that really knows adversity this last year, it was having to figure out, without Aaron Donald, what was that defense going to look like? They brought up Chris Shula. So, you know, it'll be interesting. I mean, will the Rams still be able to compete with a Rodgers? I guess if that ends up happening, you and I will be talking about this in a few weeks.
Absolutely. So you cover USC football.
You know what? So I actually went to USC.
Okay.
I didn't. I just wanted to cover something that had zero to do with any math. No math.
Gotcha.
No numbers. I'm not a big numbers person. So calm. And journalism, and at the time when I was a student there, it was a Pete Carroll, Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush era.
Oh, so Coach Ogeron was there.
That's right. Yes, exactly. Yes, that's right. So it was a nice career for me to get into, because I had two older brothers that were big, big sports obsessed fans. And so, you know, I don't cover the Trojans now, but it was like my first job when I was in college.
Well, you do a great job doing it. And if you ever meet up with their new cornerbacks coach, Trevon Reed, okay, they just brought him in. He covers, he's the coach now. He'll cover basically coaching the cornerbacks for the Trojans. He grew up on the Bayou, not far from where I live. So tell him Mike from the Bayou said hello. He'll understand that part of it. But he just left Central Florida, and now he's the new cornerbacks coach for USC. And so it'd be an interesting year for the Trojans this year. I know there's a little bit of heat on the head coach. He better get that defense straight. That's all I can tell him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. Well, I'll pass the message along, Mike, from the Bayou. No, thank you. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And, you know, we'll see what happens next week.
Thank you, Aaron. Appreciate it. All right. Aaron Coscarelli does a great job covering the LA Rams on the Believe Podcast Network. Come back. We'll go to the call lines. Got some people want to talk to us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Let's go to our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talk and text line. Let's go to Mike in Covington. Mike, you in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, guys. Just have a quick question.
Okay.
What are the consequences if the Saints don't get under the salary cap this season?
You get hit with a huge fine, but you got to. You got to be cap compliance is part of the agreement that they have made with basically the players, union owners, that you have to be cap compliant by a certain date. And that is, if you're not, you're going to pay a really steep price. And listen, somebody who's rich, they don't like to cut you a big check. I know that. They ain't crazy about that. So you could be stripped of draft choices. Things could happen in that part, but everybody has always been cap compliant, and you can bet your bottom dollar the Saints are going to be cap compliant.
So they have to be cap compliant by the league new year as well, which I think is March 12th. Yeah, so that's coming up in a couple weeks here. So the Saints have some moves that they're going to be making over the next couple weeks to keep an eye on. But also on top of, you know, the fines, like if you're not cap compliant by that date, you can lose draft picks.
You know, like, what? This team needs as many as they can get.
Right, signing restrictions. It's all these different like penalties that the NFL can just levy on a team for not being cap compliant.
And so you can bet, Mike, they're going to be cap compliant one Absolutely. Way or another. We might not like the way they do it, but they're going to be cap compliant. Let's go back to our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Renee. Renee, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Yes, I was thinking about Riley Leonard. I don't hear nobody talking about him from Notre Dame.
Yeah, Riley is a guy that I think will be a medium-round pick, middle-round pick. He's a developmental quarterback. The one thing I can do with him right away in my lineup, I can build a package, short yardage, red zone, where he can run the ball. Man, Riley Leonard's really good doing that. And he could also throw it off of that. And I'm not trying to compare him to Taysom Hill, but you could do some versions of that with him as he's developing as a quarterback. But I don't look at Riley Leonard as a starting quarterback in the National Football League ever. I think he would be a career backup, but I could build a package because the one thing he does really well, and we saw it, especially against Georgia, run the football.
It feels like his ceiling is if he can reach like the Taysom Hill type of level as a playmaker on an offense, but never be a starting quarterback, kind of like you mentioned, Mike. And he's one of those guys that he's probably going to be a day three pick in this draft, and maybe a team will take him.
And I think a fairly early day three pick.
You think so?
Yeah,
like a fourth round pick?
I went fourth or fifth round. Because I just think somebody's going to take a chance on him.
It's not a great QB class.
No.
And we've talked about the developmental picks in this class a lot. A lot of those guys will go on day two, and a few of them will go on day three. I think Riley Leonard's the one that will go on day three.
Let's go back to our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Big Cheesy. Big Cheesy, how you been, bud?
What's up, Big Cheesy?
You're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm good, Cheesy. How you been, baby?
Mike, if we get Tyler Warren, now listen to me, Mike. If we get Tyler Warren, he helps out on the right side, the left side, and the passing game, and the running game.
Well, I agree with you there. I agree with you there. The other thing, too, with him, and you hate to compare him to anybody, but he's about as close to Taysom Hill as you're going to get. And the fact that you saw what he did at Penn State. They used him out wide. He was a wide receiver. They used him in the slot. He played tight end. He played H-back. Even short yardage, they used him as a quarterback in a quarterback sneak. He played some special teams for him. Now, I don't know how much special teams you want him to play when he's doing all that for you. But he's a big man playmaker, and he's a mismatch downfield. He might not be a track sprinter as far as a runner's concerned. But when you watch him play, how he sets up a defensive back, and he gets away from him. He has a little nice setup move, and then he'll go an opposite way, and he's wide open. You watch a lot of his catches. It's not contested stuff. He's wide open, and he's being bracketed. He caught over 100 passes at Penn State. When I first did my mock, I told this to Charlie off the air, Big Cheesy, that he was not the original guy in my thinking. I really thought a long time about Jalen Walker. From Georgia. I thought he'd be a really good fit for the team because he could play that 3-4 outside linebacker. He could also play a 4-3 defensive end. I could move him around. Then when I started doing it, the damn Panthers pick him right before the Saints pick. So to me, Tyler Warren is the complete package. in that he can play outside, he can play the tight end, he could run the football for you, and you could use him in short yardage goal line situations. He's a big man. People don't realize how big a guy Tyler Warren is. He's a big cat.
We'll get the combine measurables very soon, Mike, but listed at 6'6", 260 pounds, and I believe it. I mean, we'll see ultimately what he weighs
in.
If
I was him, I'd get that weight, at least have that second number five.
255 would work fine, too. He can block on the end of the line of scrimmage.
And he is a good inline blocker.
He is. On the end of the line of scrimmage, or if you ask him to go out to the slot, he can play the Y as a tight end and a big weapon. He's just a weapon, Mike. And I love the pick. You know, I ended up going with the right tackle from Missouri for my first mock just because I like the idea of having your bookend tackle solidified for the next decade. But if Tyler Warren's there, like I've said this multiple times, you do not have to convince me taking him at pick number 9 would be a good decision. I think it would be fantastic. It's one of those weapons in this class where, you know, picking a tight end at 9, a lot of people will kind of raise their eyebrow at that. You're getting an offensive weapon that helps in your run game and your pass game, just like Big Cheesy mentioned.
Okay, my thing is, look at what Brock Bowers did. And I don't want to compare them because they're different type players. If you knew you could get that type of production, a team picking 7, 8, 9 last year, wouldn't they have thought of that if you weren't picking a quarterback?
I think in a redraft, there's no question that Brock Bowers goes top 5. And the only reason he doesn't go top 3 is because of those top 3 quarterbacks.
Because of the quarterbacks.
With Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May. But I think Brock Bowers in a redraft is number 4, Mike.
Same thing with Jared Verse. He ain't lasting as long as he
lasted to like the 20s. He's a top. Like, I think Jared Verse is right up in that conversation, too, for top 10, if not even top 5.
The thing with Jared Verse that got me, man, he goes to Philly and he's talking trash to the Eagles fans and talking trash to the Eagles offensive line. And he was beating them.
Yeah.
I mean, and he was talking to them as he was walking off the field. And them guys, like, what? That's the rookie doing that?
He's a bulldog, Mike.
Brock Bowers, a lot of people said, oh, it's just because he played on a great Georgia team. No, you know why he was great? Because he was great.
It's the same thing with Tyler Warren and Penn State. Yeah. Tyler Warren was and Penn State had a great duo of running backs that will get selected, and we haven't really talked much about them because they get a little bit overshadowed in a stacked running back class.
Give me a middle-round pick of one of those guys.
They're both very good, but Tyler Warren was the guy for the Penn State offense this past year.
Yeah, what would have kept me up at night? The running backs or Tyler Warren if I was a defensive coordinator?
Easily, Tyler Warren.
Tyler Warren.
No receiver scared you in that offense, that's for sure.
And the quarterback, you don't know what the hell you will get out of him from week to week. And they had some people put him as a top 10 player. My thing is, you can't be watching the same guy. You can't be.
Look at that tape against Notre Dame and tell me that he's a first-round pick.
We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike D'Antilio along with Charlie Long at 5:20. We'll have on with us Scott Sanders, former Major League Baseball pitcher. Talk a little bit LSU baseball. We'll go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line at 5:10. We'll talk to Jimmy, and I think we got somebody else hanging on. And we'll have a lot more sports talk, a lot more football talk, Saints talk, draft talk, and some LSU baseball talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike D'Antilio along with Charlie Long in studio at 5:45. Steve Geller joins us for our triple option feature. A little after 5:20 today, we'll talk a little bit LSU baseball with Scott Sanders, former Major League Baseball pitcher. Before we go to Jimmy and Gretna, man, Mike Giannetti does a fantastic job with Spot Track. And he has this deal on X that Derek Carr has been paid over $60 million over the last two seasons with the Saints, but New Orleans has only accounted for $19.8 million of cap money for Carr over those two seasons. So what he's pointing out is if they do a full conversion, the dead money cap hit for Carr next season would be $59.67 million. So this is almost not a personnel decision. You also got to look at all that money now that is being wrapped up in Derek Carr at this stage. But, again, Mike Giannetti does a fantastic job and got sent that quote to me. But they paid him $60 million over the last 2 years, but they've only accounted for 19.8 of it on their salary cap. So, somewhere down the line, you got to pay the piper. And – If next year's dead cap hit for a car is would be, he's estimating, $59.67 million. Let's go to our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Let's go to Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy in the huddle with Mike and Charlie. And Jimmy, before you start, the news this morning that broke about allegations of gambling, and again, it's just allegations now being investigated, and most likely this is something coming from Vegas. They see it long before FBI people here or anybody else does. Did that catch you by surprise? Because four of those five players, they were the best four players basically on the team for UNO, and it's been a couple weeks.
Yeah, look, I went to the game the other night, Monday night. They're down to eight players. It's been a rough year for the new coach, Stacy Hollowell, after the Schlesinger term. The era ended there. Only won four games. I think that was the last home game. But, yeah, the best players were out. There's some other universities that have been indicted or implicated in this stuff. So, it's a rough year. We all know about the budget issues at UNO. Enrollment's been down and since Katrina, and it's catching up. Really wanted to call and let the people know that I'm sure you, Mike, and Charlie have heard. Master P, he's heard about this, and he's stepping in as in the name, image, licensing era, which UNO has really none of because we don't have a football team. It's really all goes through basketball. But Master P, the famous rapper down here, is stepping up as the new chief of operations, president of basketball operations, above Hollowell, the new coach, in hopes that they can get this budget situation situated, and save UNO Athletics, save the whole university. I wanted to get your take on that. I guess we're going to see what happens with the gambling or, the point shaving, whatever, this and that. But I'm excited. We needed something because it's been a miserable year for UNO between the losses, the players not showing up, and now we know why. To me, Master P is the type of guy who could generate some interest, i.e. like a Deion Sanders type.
I agree with you. I think that the one thing, he can go to people who have money to give money. And this is part of kind of past the collection plate that you see all across college athletics today to try to keep up. And they do have people with money, and if you ask them at the right time and the right situation, they're going to give it up. And so I applaud UNO to do that, to reach out to Percy and to get him involved. And Master P knows a lot of people that could help generate money to UNO Athletics. And they, you're right about that, Jimmy. They in a money crunch, major league-wise. So if any help that Master P and Percy Miller can do, I'm all for that. And we'll have to find a little bit more about this information. But I know from in years past, and I have a couple people that I grew up with that actually work in Vegas, and they'll tell you the people that catch them in these type situations, it's not the FBI locally. It's Las Vegas that cops them in. And remember with the Alabama baseball coach and somebody involved with him placing bets in Ohio, and that was caught not by anybody local. That was caught by Vegas. And they've, the one thing with them is they don't want you, they always want you to think this is all legit. If you have any sort of aspirations in your head that maybe that this isn't legit and I'm not gambling, that hurts money. You're taking money out of my pocket now. And so they want this to be legit, and they copped out a lot of people that were involved in gambling stuff in the past.
So it's a school and an NCAA investigation that's apparently been launched into the UNO basketball program with these four players that are accused of sports betting. And it's something that we know very little about early on, Mike, because it literally dropped
We don't know
today.
The dynamics of it.
We don't know the dynamics. We don't know the time frame. We don't know the amount of money that was bet. We don't know any of the type of specific information, but we'll find out more as the investigation kind of goes along here. It's obviously fascinating. It's something that we'll follow in the coming weeks. But I mean,
I was around the Hot Rod Hundley situation with Ned Fowler at Tulane, and that was before your time, Charlie.
But, yes, it was.
But in essence, that's how they got caught. It was a Vegas catch there, and they reported it to the people locally. So we'll have to see getting a little bit more information on exactly what's happening there at UNO. But listen, for Master P and Percy Miller to be involved, I'm all for that if he can help out UNO athletics. Let's go back to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to James. James, you know how to with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, guys. I think I said this before. You know, Kellen Moore has a monstrous task on his hands, not just by the state of the franchise, but basically he's got to overcome Loomis's bad decisions. And you know, I don't know if he's going to be able to do it, but the more moves that Loomis makes, the more I like this kid, because he had to know he was stepping his foot in something after going and dealing with the Eagles, and the Eagles having such a great general manager like Howie. You know, he started picking up guards and making them tackles. You know, I think the best offensive lineman in this upcoming draft class probably going to end up as a guard. You know, but either way, I'm kind of hopeful that you know, this new head coach of ours is going to do a few things. And the first thing I want to ask you guys, do you think, because he was right there in the midst of Prescott's ascension as the quarterback due to his injury. How much better do you think Dak was as a rookie than Rattler? Keep in mind, you know, Dak had a
better offensive line, better running game, yeah, better receivers. No question. But I thought he did a great job with Dak and getting Dak, because Dak was a bit of a bolter at Mississippi State. He wasn't a guy that spent a lot of time reading coverage, you know, because his instincts was, okay, if my primary guy's not open, I'm going to take off and run with it. And he was skilled with that. I thought he really developed him in his ability to pick up secondary, third selections downfield. I thought that's what really Kellen Moore brought to the table with Dak, and Dak has praised him for that, that he kind of took my talent and took it to a different level. It's different in high school and college. And then you go to the pros, you got to be able to read and recognize coverages. And I thought he did a very, very good job of helping Dak with that sort of changeover. And you saw Cliff Kingsbury do a very similar thing with Jaden. Jaden's first instinct at times at LSU was, okay, if Malik O'Brien's not open, I'm taking off. I'm running with it. He was much more diligent this year with his runs. Not to say he didn't take off and run with it, but he was much more diligent running the football, and I think a lot of that had to do with Cliff Kingsbury's approach to how you handle him and getting him in a situation which makes him feel comfortable. I think Kellen did that with Dak Prescott in those first couple years with the Cowboys. But their offensive line, their receiving core, their running back core was better than what the Saints had. And so, Zeke got old, and then the running game really sort of sloshed off, and then you had some injuries and some age catch you up front along the offensive line. Charlie?
So when we talked with Babe Laufenberg about this, Mike, he mentioned the very unique connection that Dak Prescott had with Kellen Moore from Dallas when they went from teammates, and then Kellen Moore became the QB coach as soon as he retired from football, playing football, and then he became the offensive coordinator the very next year. So he went from being a teammate to being a quarterback coach to the OC. And once again, in that time, CBS Sports has a great article on this that they posted a couple years ago when Kellen was technically the OC of the Chargers, but the Cowboys had plenty of success with Moore ranking second in the league in points per game, 27.7, second in total yards per game, 376.3, behind only the Kansas City Chiefs in that time span from 2019 through 2022. And if you ask Dak Prescott and even CeeDee Lamb as well, they both gush about Kellen Moore and their relationship with him and how he made them better and how, you know, those numbers just don't happen by accident. Yes, there was talent on that Cowboys roster. You know, the offensive line was great for a time. They had weapons, and Dak Prescott obviously evolved as a passer under Kellen Moore. but Dak gives a lot of credit to Kellen, and Kellen gives it right back to him as well. Kellen's talked about the leader that Dak Prescott is, and it's a great relationship that they had, and Dak has also come out recently and said that he's happy for Kellen becoming a first-time NFL head coach in New Orleans.
And you heard the Eagles players say very similar things. If it was Lane Johnson or Saquon Barkley or, you know, A.J., exact same sort of things. My thing is, it's not about Kellen Moore, the coach. It's who he's coaching. Okay, this team needs the horses, and that's what they're lacking right now. They don't have enough of them football-wise. They need to get better personnel-wise, especially up front, offensive, defensive line. They need certainly another playmaker on the offensive side of the football. But I think that Super Bowl game showed everybody, if you don't win up front, even the best, he was a mere mortal that game when he went up against the Eagles front seven. And they didn't even blitz one time in that game. But it was Kellen's ability to adapt to a new system that was built much more about the running game than he had ever been about during his career as a coach. When we come back, we'll have on with Scott Sanders, former Major League Baseball pitcher, now taking a close look at the LSU Tigers right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakwood Hard Jewelers talking text line. Former Major League Baseball pitcher, now he's in the real world, as Hebert would say. Scott Sanders, also covering the LSU Tigers for us. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, brother. How you guys doing today?
Good. Scott, I know last year you brought it up very quickly to us, and he was a highly recruited player, came in with a lot of accolades, but Stephen Milam, I mean, you know, I don't know what more you could say about him. Is he pound for pound maybe the best LSU player they've had? Because he ain't got much on the hoof now, but man, that little guy can play. And, you know, him switching positions, and we had Coach Johnson on, he sort of explained everything to us, but how well he swings the bat, how well he can play in the field, he's everything as advertised when he came out of high school.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, Stephen Milam, he's one of those guys that you look at him, obviously he's not tall, but he is, let me tell you, he is, when I tell you ripped, that kid is ripped. Like, he doesn't, if he's got like 4% body fat, I might be exaggerating, because like, his skin doesn't look like mine. His skin looks like it wants to tear. You know what I mean? But he is a ball of muscles. But the one thing about him, he's a grinder. You know, he's a baseball player. Obviously he's a switch hitter. And a lot of people don't really understand how hard it is to be a switch hitter nowadays. You know, because you literally have to put in the same amount of time on both sides of the plate. So what that ends up doing, it ends up putting you in the cage longer. You know what I mean? It takes your batting practice a little bit longer. So many things go with it. But, you know, he is just what they call a true grinder baseball player. And honestly, that's the type of – he is like Jay Johnson's perfect type of player. Like, that's the type of guys he loves.
Scott, we got to see the young phenom freshman himself in Schmidt. Again, a guy that I think had he kind of made it known that, hey, I'm going to play Major League Baseball – I think he'd have been a pretty high pick, but he decides he's going to go to LSU instead. And we got to see him in the first outing. So as a former pitcher, kind of give us a scouting report on Schmidt.
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, like I told you guys last week, his size is, I mean, he's got a perfect pitcher's body.
Yeah.
He's got a beautiful clean arm. But what separates him from anybody else is that curveball. You know, he's got a big league curveball as an 18-year-old kid. Obviously, you know, it can be erratic at times because he's 18 years old. You know, he might be 19 now. Let's call him 18 and a half or 19 years old. But obviously his fastball is live. You know, I mean, he's a pitcher. He's not just a thrower. But let me tell you, when his curveball's on, you know, I ended up going out to the park early and hung out and saw the guys from Nichols and did a few things. And then I came home and watched it on TV because I wanted to watch him pitch. I like watching him pitch on TV, to be honest, a lot of times because you can see the stuff better. And, man, I was impressed. But, you know, like I said, he by far is the most talented freshman to ever walk on LSU's campus ever. And that's big accolades.
Scott, looking ahead to this matchup against Dallas Baptist, I think it's going to be a really fascinating test because if you're looking at LSU's non-conference schedule, this is the one top 25 ranked team that they play. And then, you know, they start off their SEC slate with Missouri. So they're not really going to get tested for basically another month after this game. But this is a really strong matchup against a good team. Jay has kind of talked about them as you can pencil them in for 45 wins every single year. They're going to win Conference USA. They're going to be right in that conversation on the back end of hosting potentially. They're a solid team, and you're getting this midweek matchup against them at Globe Life Field. What I wanted to ask you about is the pitching for tonight. Connor Ware is getting the start. He got the midweek start last week as well. Want to get your thoughts on what you saw from him, because Jay had raved about this guy preseason, especially, you know, fall and spring ball, calling him one of the best pitchers on the staff. He started the midweek game last week, didn't give up an earned run, three innings pitched, two strikeouts. And I don't know about you, Scott, but just watching Connor Ware, it felt like he was just in control for the three innings that he pitched.
Yeah, so Connor Ware is, you know, a guy, you know, coming out of junior college, had a lot of success. And I'll be honest, like, he's really got a bad draw, because if he was here the past 2 years, he'd be starting probably Saturday and or Sunday. And, you know, this year with the arms that they have, you know, he's literally going to be probably the midweek guy. And obviously if somebody falters, you know, on the weekends, he will probably be the first guy to get a shot at that Sunday spot, you know. But he's just a guy, his fastballs, you know, he's 92, 94, can get up to 95 at times, but he's got a breaking ball, a changeup. He controlled that game from start to finish. And tonight's going to be a big test for him, because I'll be honest, this is going to probably be the best team he's probably ever faced, possibly, you know, possibly in his career, and since he's, you know, come out of high school. So, but, you know, Dallas Baptist is a great RPI team to play, because they're going to win 40 games no matter what. They might win 45. So, you know, you go out and beat them, you get those points. And RPI is obviously, it's big these days. So,
and then, you know, last week, I kind of anticipated that Zach Cowan was going to get a midweek start, the former Wofford ace, but he came out of the bullpen after Connor Ware. And I think it's an interesting decision by Jay Johnson and, you know, specifically Nate Yeske and the coaching staff, because it's a little bit of a different look, isn't it? Where you have like the tall left-handed pitcher and Connor Ware, who's all like 6'4", and then you kind of have the shorter, you know, right-handed pitcher with Zach Cowan. It's a little bit of a different look for an offense. I thought it worked really well last week, and I imagine they'll probably use that same formula tonight.
Yeah, I definitely think so. The other thing, I'm pretty sure Gavin Kidry at some point is going to possibly get to the game tonight. So I'm thinking between those guys and Kidry, I think that's going to – you know, obviously, one thing about Jay, when he has something working, he lets it work until it doesn't work anymore. You know what I mean? So I could definitely see, you know, I could definitely see that kind of same type of thing going on tonight. And, you know, obviously, tonight is going to be a good test. Number one, you're going to be excited. Everybody's going to be excited to play in, you know, a big league stadium. But at the same time, you know, there's not going to be that many people. So sometimes those big stadiums are only like, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 8,000 people. It kind of gives it a very weird dynamic. You know what I mean? So, you know, whereas if you come to the box, and if there's 8,000, 10,000, 11,000, you can feel the people. But when you get in a big stadium like that with not that many people, so I'm not really sure what the crowd's going to be like. But hopefully it can get these guys hyped up and play some good baseball.
Scott, someone asked me this today to ask you, knowing you were going to be on, but the changing in the weather, where, man, it gets cold, then it warms up, and then it gets hot, then it cools. I mean, that sort of thing. As a baseball player, to adjust to that, and what does that do to your game? And I thought it was a good question. I don't think I've ever asked you that. But especially this time of year, February and March, when you have those days where, man, it could be cold, you know, on a Tuesday, and then as hot as hell on a Wednesday.
Yeah, so the cold weather, believe it or not, as a pitcher, I love the cold weather. The only thing that I always had trouble with was keeping moisture in my hands. So that's why you see pitchers lick a lot. Same thing with IU quarterbacks, you know, in football, when you see them, when they're always licking their hands in football. But hitters don't really like the cold weather, to be honest, because obviously it's not fun. They stand around the field a lot more. They don't do a lot during the innings, you know, when they're in the field, except if they run around backing up bases or something. But it, you know, everybody kind of wants a little heat, you know, to show up. I mean, I don't think anybody wants 95 to 100, because that, believe it or not, that is just as bad as – I'd rather it be 55 or 45 than be 95 to 100, because that just absolutely wears your body out. And after, you know, 50, 60 pitches, 3-4 innings, like, you literally hope you just catch your second win. But you know, the weather can definitely play a factor. But the main thing it really messes with is, like I said, the grip on the baseball. You know, so as long as you can get a good grip on a baseball and keep your hands moist, and for pitchers, it does stink, because it does take you a little longer to get warmed up. But once you get warmed up, you can pretty much stay warm i.e. by going into the clubhouse in between innings when you're not pitching, you know, all that good stuff. So, but I'd much rather with Cole because those guys hated hitting in the cold.
I don't know if the SEC will pass this rule or not, but Jared Jones stealing bases is not a good thing for any infielder. Man, you see the big man move out there, and it's amazing because, man, you see how he's built and everything, and now stole a couple bases a couple of nights ago. And you brought it up last year, and I brought it up to Coach Johnson. You're the first one to sort of bring it up about you saw the change in him. That, you know, he became that, you know, it was either strikeout or home run. It was one of the two. Now he's become much more selective as a hitter. But now this dude's starting to steal bases, and he's a big man out there on that baseball diamond.
Oh, yeah, he's definitely a defensive end, I'll tell you that, in football, for sure. But I'll tell you one thing. Every time he slides to second base, I'm like, somebody needs to – we need to work on his sliding drills because he keeps hitting and rolling to one side. I'm like, no, we can't get you hurt trying to steal second base against Nichols in a midweek game, buddy. You know what I mean? So, but, hey, you know, he wants to be a complete baseball player, and I get that. And, you know, that's one thing about Jay. Jay doesn't care if you're the big power hitter or if you're Steven Milam. And if he thinks he can take a bag to get an extra run, obviously during the midweek when you got a bunch of games to get that game over with, you know, in seven innings, he's going to do what he has to do.
And then, Scott, looking ahead to the Frisco Classic this weekend as well, I think there's some interesting matchups there. Kansas State's one that, you know, they got off to a really poor start. They had a tournament in Conway at Coastal's place, and they lost a couple games to Coastal. They lost a game to North Carolina in the midweek. So they picked up some early losses. But then this past week, they were actually at Globe Life Field, and they picked up some huge wins against, you know, teams like Arkansas and TCU and Michigan. So they've really bounced back from a slow start. I know they're 4-4 on the season. But then Nebraska, you know, a team that was in the top 25 before UL took them down in 2-3 this past weekend. I'm obviously very happy about that, being a Cajun grad. But and then also Sam Houston State, who's always got a good program. It's a really fascinating weekend series, but the way the arms line up, and we talked with Aaron Fitt about this last night, you know, with Cade Anderson and Anthony Ianson and Chase Shores, and, you know, where you kind of put that rotation, weekend rotation, as far as the best in the country, just from a stuff advantage. And I think, you know, when we were talking with them, yes, you can say the level of competition may have not been there so far with teams like Omaha and just early on in the season. But at the same time, stuff travels, Scott. And I think that this is going to be a big test early on in the season. But I'm very confident in those three pitchers having great showings.
Oh, 100%. I mean, obviously, you know, when you start putting, you know, pen to paper and start putting, you know, talent to talent, obviously those three guys are going to be the top talented, you know, starting pitches, and, you know, this weekend, and, you know, there in Frisco. So, obviously, you take your chances with stuff anytime. Any, you know, obviously, the three teams they're going to play, they are baseball, you know, schools. They've had some success. They've had some ups. They've had some downs. You know, but you're going to have to go out and play baseball to beat them. You know, they're not going to show up and roll over because you're LSU. You know, so the one thing I am interested to see, I have a feeling that, you know, with both of the guys going, Ianson and Shores going both on Saturday, I have a feeling that Jay may flip those two this week, and if Shores go on Saturday and Ianson on Sunday, that's just my gut feel. I don't know anything, but that's just kind of my gut feel. And it'd be interesting to see what he does. But I like the Tigers' chances, you know, just because of the depth in general of their pitching staff. I mean, I think they've thrown 15 or 16 guys, and it's been impressive. And like I said, I know they haven't played the greatest talent, but still it's so many strikeouts compared to so little walks. That's what's key.
Scott, last question for you, and I know it's early in the season, but has been someone on this roster that, you know, you had a certain impression of him before the season, and he's really impressed you more than you thought he would be at this point?
Well, actually, Hernandez, the catcher, has really impressed me behind the plate, you know, because I knew he was a hitter. Didn't really know, you know, much about him catching wise because I think he DH'd and played some first base last year at Indiana State. But I, you know, I watched him behind the plate, and he's been very, you know, I'm not saying he's a Gold Glove defender, but with the bat he has, you know, he's a above average defender because of his bat. You know what I mean? So I was he's the one for sure. And obviously, you know, Stanfield's, you know, he's been hitting, which that's going to be one of the keys to LSU having a great SEC, you know, SEC run. If he can hit, you know, even if he has to fall to the 9-0 and just be a 9-0 guy and play, you know, Gold Glove center field, but if he can hit 300 or, you know, and steal, say, you 20, 30 bases. He's the other one. I love watching him play center field, to be honest.
Scott, thanks so much for joining us. You doing some Watergrass in this weekend or what?
I'm going to try to do it. Absolutely none.
What? Come on. Well, I got the grandkids, so I got to deal with it. But
that's right.
All righty. Scott, thanks so much for joining us, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott.
You have a great evening.
All righty.
Thank you.
Scott Sanders, former Nichols State pitcher, pitched, I think, 8 years in the major leagues, and now giving us really great scouting reports each and every week on the LSU baseball team.
This is the biggest week non-conference that LSU has scheduled. DBU is a top 20 team. Kansas State, as I mentioned, has already picked up premium top 25 wins over teams like Arkansas and TCU. And then Nebraska was a top 25 team before UL took them down. Sam Houston State's got a good program. These are the four games that you kind of highlight in non-conference play, and they're all in the same week. So it's very exciting.
We'll be back with our triple option feature right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Steve Geller, Charlie Long. It's our triple option feature. Steven, you first.
Well, there was some negative news surrounding UNO today, but the positive part of it was some optimism surrounding the program, despite being tied to that NCAA sports betting investigation. The school, held a press conference today announcing that Percy Master P. Miller is the new president of basketball operations there. You know, he laid out a plan for UNO's return to being a successful mid-major program, which includes getting area businesses on board to help with the name, image, and likeness battle. UNO men's basketball this season, guys, began the new era, the Stacy Hollowell taking over, and the team's 4-25 right now. Yep. In his first season. There's two games left on the year. So, yeah, it's been rough, and we know the school's faced the recent budget cuts, deficit that's resulted in the cuts over there at the university. And while there's some uncertainty still surrounding everything, the addition of Master P has a little bit of a brighter future for hopefully ahead for men's basketball at UNO.
Charlie?
Guys, he didn't shoot very well last night, but in the premium matchup between the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Lakers, Luka Doncic made history. And let me explain. So he recorded 19 points, 15 rebounds, 12 assists, a triple-double in the Lakers' 107-99 victory over the Mavericks, his first matchup against his former team. And Cullen Steele sent me this. I think it's a great stat via Bleacher Report. Luka joined LeBron James and Russell Westbrook as the only three players to record a triple-double versus all 30 NBA teams last night. So, Luka got his revenge, the Mavericks picked up a loss, the Lakers picked up a W, and Luka Doncic, even though he didn't have a great shooting night, picked up a very crucial triple-double in that victory.
We've had this twice, back-to-back days, asking me about Jack Sawyer, the defensive end from Ohio State. Jack was a five-star recruit. Ohio State gets a lot of those guys. He was a former tight end in high school, moved over to defensive end. And his style of play in watching him so many games at Ohio State, it reminds me of a guy that wore the black and gold for a little while, Trey Hendrickson. Now, not trying to compare players because Jack's a little bit taller, a little bit more filled out at this stage of his career than Trey was when he came out. But they have a lot of similarities between one another. I would look at Jack as an early second-round pick. He could play defensive end in a 4-3 lineup. I could also stand him up as a 3-4 defensive end outside linebacker, as a pass rusher. Really good athlete. I love his pedal to the metal. He gives it to you on each and every play. And he's a playmaker on the defensive side of the football. Puts a lot of pressure points on quarterbacks and getting into the backfield. And, man, if I could get him and Talik Williams play him on the nose, it'd be pretty good there. But to answer your question, I've got Jack Sawyer and kind of a group of players from 25 to 40 that they could all kind of interchange one another. Jack Sawyer is one of those guys, and he is a bit of a hybrid in that he could play as a 3-4 outside linebacker or as a 4-3 defensive end. But if I was to comp him, it would be Trey Hendrickson.
Oh. Oh, wow. That's interesting.
He's a little taller, a little bit more filled out, Watch how he plays. His style of play.
I love Jack Sawyer. Mike, I had him going in the first round. He feels like a Dan Campbell type of guy, and if he's there at pick 28, I think you would have to maybe convince them not to take him. But if he's somehow there at pick 40 for the Saints in the second round, I would be completely fine with taking him.
Run up with that card right away because, again, in this new defense, now you don't have a nose guard. So that's something this team's going to have to look at or look for in the offseason. But also guys that are a little bit versatile. At that outside line, 3-4 outside linebacker position that could also play as a 4-3 defensive end. Jack Sawyer can do both of them. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, I want to thank all the callers that called in. Sorry we couldn't get to everyone, but Steve, in the 6 o'clock hour, you got somebody that knows a little bit about the NFL draft. He works, he's one of the senior analysts and data science guys. Former Tulane linebacker.
Sam Brookhouse. Yeah, we had a great interview with him during Radio Row during Super Bowl, so I figured let's get him on right now. The NFL Combine in action. Get some of his thoughts on some players.
And at 7 o'clock, LSU playing Dallas Baptist.
Big time.
Right here on the Big 870 WWL. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.
What's going on, everybody? Wednesday, February 26th edition of Sports Talk, heading to the second half in an abbreviated show today as we're going to LSU baseball taking on Dallas Baptist. It's a top 18 matchup today and on the road for the Bayou Bengals in a nice venue where the Texas Rangers play ball. So an MLB park for these guys, you know they're going to be excited about that, plus just getting to be away from the box on the road. And in a little hostile territory, though I'm sure plenty of purple and gold fans will be packing the stadium over there. That action starts 7 p.m. right here on WWL. After the first break, we're going to be talking to Sam Brookhouse, former Tulane linebacker, also does Sumer Sports, senior NFL analyst and data scientist. Help us look at some prospects. Maybe the Saints will be interested at the NFL Combine. And speaking of the Combine, GM Mickey Loomis, along with head coach Kellen Moore, talked to the media today and caused a big stir with folks saying that Derek Carr will be the starting quarterback in 2025. But, you know, we weren't there, Charlie, but for me reading the quotes, it doesn't really say that Carr is the guy. Looking at what, you know, Mickey Loomis told the media, I feel like we've got a guy we can win with. To me, that says it's a nice compliment and great things about Carr there, but it's not saying he is our guy most definitively to me. And also, Kellen Moore said, we feel fortunate to have Derek here, the experience he has. He's a big-time quarterback in this league. Once again, it didn't scream to me that he's definitely QB1 come week one of this season coming up.
I think it's indicating that he will be, and Loomis's final quote here, and we'll listen to the Kellen audio in just a second, talking about the contract for Derek Carr, which right now the cap hit is the fourth highest in the entire NFL at over $51.4 million. And with the Saints being negative 47 in the hole right now, a restructure will have to happen. Now, Kat Terrell details in this ESPN article. She does a great job talking about how if they restructure his contract, they can free up words of $31 million in cap space. They would still be in the hole by about $16 million, but that's a little bit more you can work with there in cap hell. We talked to all these different cap experts about this. It's going to take years for them to get back under and, you know, kind of reset everything just with how they've been kind of playing with the cap. But with Derek Carr's contract, this is where it gets kind of scary. That if they restructure him and save that $31 million this year, his cap hit next year rises to $69 million in 2026.
Don't like that.
And it's just, it's not feasible to work with. It just doesn't work. So it's a very strange situation. Mike and I talked about this in the first hour a lot, and we kind of mentioned that it's a poor financial decision to stick with Carr. And yes, you can make it work with the money for this year, but then you're just pushing off this same conversation to next year, Steve. And it seems like that's what they're going to do.
Saints reporter Aaron Summers, along with former Saints QB Luke McCown, caught up with Kellen Moore at the Combine today. And here's what the new head coach of the Saints had to say to those two. Here it is.
We're here at the NFL Combine alongside new Saints head coach Kellen Moore, Luke McCown, Aaron Summers here. Are you settling in a little bit more? How are things going for you now?
Yeah, this gets you back to a little bit more of a normal routine. You know, we're all used to coming to Indy this time of year, and so it's been an awesome process and really fun to team up with the scouting department here as we go through this process.
How does the process change for you now as the head coach coming to the combine and, you know, going into a new staff, a new scheme, everything that you're going to have to be building here?
It's been a lot of fun. You get to see all sides of the ball, and so you get to be a part of the defensive meetings, which is a lot of fun. Get to experience those guys, and so it's been an excellent process for us.
Kellen, you've climbed the ladder pretty quickly, and we talked in my short stint in Dallas in 2017. This was the direction you wanted to go post-career. Did you assume that it would happen this fast?
Well, I certainly think most of that comes down to being around really awesome people.
Right.
Feel fortunate for the transition from playing to coaching in Dallas, going to Los Angeles and Philadelphia. When you're around great people, you got great opportunities to have great things. Sure. And so I feel fortunate.
For sure. Awesome.
Well, when you look at this team in 2025 season coming up, what excites you the most?
Yeah, I think we got an awesome blend of veteran leadership with really some excellent young guys that are going to become the anchors to our program, and excellent opportunity ahead.
Talk to me about your relationship with Mickey. I've known Mickey a long time. I think he's one of the best in the league at evaluating players. They've got a track record of being very successful, particularly in the latter half of the draft. We just asked Jeff Ireland how important it was to build out your roster through the nuts and bolts, right, at the back end of the draft and undrafted free agency. Talk about how that process is going to work with you and Mickey and decisions made on draft picks.
Yeah, one of the most attractive things about this place was just the leadership. Starting with Mrs. Benson, but Mickey, Jeff, Kai, Michael, this is an excellent, excellent group that has a ton of experience being together,
right,
which I think is a great opportunity for myself. And so, lean into those guys on things that you haven't experienced. Certainly, it's going to be an awesome job to collaborate with them.
Yeah. I don't want you to have to give away any secrets yet, but offensively, what are we going to do? What are we doing?
We'll certainly play with some speed. We'll play fast. We'll play a physical brand of football. How it looks, what players are on the field, we'll let all those guys take care of that.
When you look at players, and you've talked about you want to draft good people, you want to have good people in the locker room, people that love football, why is that so important?
Those seasons in the NFL, they're long and they're challenging. I think you got to have the right kind of people in that locker room to handle the adversity, handle the ups and downs. You're going to go on a winning streak. You might go on a little losing streak every once in a while. And the guys that can handle that, that can continue to perform at their best and rally together as a group, that's all you can ask for.
Your philosophy on draft picks, is it drafting for need or best available player?
Certainly anytime it's the best available player, you're going to lean into that. And so I'm excited to team up with Mickey and Jeff and as we go through this process. But, we'll draft the right players for the right situations for us.
Awesome. So if there's a particular, kind of blue and orange running back at 9, what's the thought process?
I might have to step out of the room.
But you are getting an opportunity to really get to spend a lot of time here with Mickey and Jeff and the new coaching staff. How valuable is that for just everybody being new?
All the little interactions, I think, really all add up through this whole process, whether it's sitting in a defensive meeting and having a conversation with, a new defensive coach, them meeting up with Jeff, all those walks down the hallways. Every little opportunity for us is another chance to grow as an entire group.
So fresh off the Super Bowl, got a ring coming. Right into head coaching interviews, you're a hot name in the coaching circles. Get hired by the Saints. When's there going to be rest?
Hopefully 4th of July. Maybe we'll get a nice little break around there. So,
very good.
Yeah, not expecting much right now.
Awesome. Definitely no rest for Kellen Moore right now. The NFL Combine coming up. We got the NFL free agency, the draft, and like you said, maybe 4th of July weekend he can go enjoy something. In that conversation, alluding to running back, Ginty from Boise State, if he's on the board for the Saints at number 9, would Kellen Moore want to be, interested in adding the fellow alum? And he's like, I might have to step out of the room on that one. We've talked about it a lot, I think, Charlie. And to me, yeah, you needed to add a running back to this roster, but with the 9th overall pick, there's way too many other needs right there.
To be fair, like if they pick Ashton Ginty, let's say he's a top 5 player on their board, and he's sitting there at pick 9. I wouldn't be mad at it. You know what I mean? Like, best player available, and I like what Kellen had said there about that as well. Like, when you have this many holes, and McCown had asked him about drafting for need, they need so much on this roster, Steve. So at this point, you do kind of just trust your board and go with the best pick. Now, that's why Mike and I are big fans of Tyler Warren at potentially pick 9, because even though he's a tight end, maybe he's the same thing with Brock Bowers, right? If you were redrafting last year's draft, where does Brock Bowers go?
He's going to probably be a top 10 pick.
I think he's number 4. Legitimately, I think he only goes after Jaden Daniels, Caleb Williams, and Drake May. Those top three, like, franchise-level quarterbacks. And I know that Michael Penix had some good showings in his limited action with the Falcons. Bo Nix had a great rookie season as well.
Sure.
It's just an elite rookie quarterback class last year. But Brock Bowers is, like, on a Hall of Fame trajectory, right? And even though he's a tight end, I think he's the 4th overall pick in a redraft from last year. It's kind of early to be doing redrafts, obviously. It's only been 1 year with these guys. But
people are doing them, though. You know that for sure.
That's kind of what I'm saying, is when you pick a talented guy at pick 9, you know, the best player available, even if it's not the number one position of need, whether that be offensive line, defensive line, you know the Saints need to bolster their trenches, that's for sure. But if you can get a Tyler Warren and he has a Brock Bowers level rookie season where you add a legitimate, like, Pro Bowl, all-pro level weapon to your offense, you do that every time. And maybe Ashton Jeanty is that. I know Kellen kind of joked that he would have to step out of the room there if he was on the board. And
Boise State pride there.
Yeah, exactly. I love Ashton Jeanty. And if he's the number one guy on their board and he's the pick, I wouldn't hate it. However, you know, there are other positions of need as well.
My only thing with Bowers, I'll say, is what else did the Raiders have last season to throw to?
But it's the same thing with Tyler Warren. Tyler Warren was the one weapon in that Penn State offense. I don't think they had a wide receiver make a catch in their semifinal loss to Notre Dame. It was all the running backs, their running back duo, which we'll talk more about, because I feel like guys like Nick Singleton and that duo is kind of a little bit underrated because of how stacked this running back class is. But it was them and it was Tyler Warren. That was the entire offense for Penn State last year, and they got all the way to the semifinals of the college football playoff.
What we're going to do is take a break right now, get more of the NFL Combine and Draft Talk. Sam Bruckhaus, the former former Tulane linebacker, works for Sumer Sports now as an analyst over there. We're going to take a break and come back with him, get his thoughts on all things NFL Combine and also what the black and gold should be looking at right now. We're taking a break here on Sports Talk. Be right back after this. Back here on Sports Talk, Steve Geller along with Charlie Long, and happy to welcome in former Tulane linebacker and Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst and data scientist, Sam Bruckhaus. Sam, thanks so much for the time. Really enjoyed talking to you at the Radio Row during Super Bowl week. How's it going?
Yeah, appreciate y'all. I'm out here in Indianapolis enjoying a couple of steaks. You know, I got a shrimp cocktail from St. Elmo's on Monday, and you know, the shrimp just ain't the same as the Gulf, but boy, does that cocktail sauce clean your nose out. It's a very interesting thing. I can't say that I enjoyed it as much as my time back in New Orleans, but it was certainly interesting.
Great stuff, man. How did you enjoy the Super Bowl? Did you get to stick around for the game?
So I didn't get to stick around for the game. You know, it's a little easier to analyze and turn around stuff when you're watching it on TV. But I got to say, you know, you got to own up to it sometimes. I was wrong. I thought the Chiefs, and in particular Patrick Mahomes, were going to have a better performance. And in particular, I thought that their interior offensive line, which had been elite all year and has been elite 4 years, would match up better against the Eagles' defensive line. That didn't happen, and thus the Eagles had a blowout victory.
Yeah, pretty impressive showing from the Philadelphia Eagles. It was nice to see Kellen Moore's offense also, too, on display, the new head coach of the Saints. Going into this combine, expecting, man, there's so many needs for this Saints club going into the draft. Some of the prospects that they could be looking at, though, one is very interesting that's popped up in mock drafts, is at the tight end position in Tyler Warren out of Penn State. What have you seen in this guy?
So Tyler Warren is what our scouts like to label a true joker. He's a guy who can play in line and block, and he's performed very well in what we like to call our Sumer scores, which are developed a little bit more objectively. You know, we use computers to do all that, and it's trained on years and years of scouting data. And he's been an excellent blocker, but he also can pass catch and be used in other alignments. In particular, Penn State would actually use him at the quarterback position, kind of like a wildcat quarterback a little bit. Here's what I'm worried about, though. The tight end position is not super highly valued in terms of APY, average pay per year, in the league. And the NFL draft sets the values at which these players have to be paid given where they're drafted. And as a result, if you take a tight end very early, you basically have to ensure that he is a top five, top 10 tight end in the league. A team that did it this year, the Raiders, Brock Bowers, that turned out to be true. He was borderline all pro all year. However, that's few and far between. Also, tight ends have a pretty long development curve, meaning it takes them a year, 2 years, 3 years to really settle in to the NFL speed, especially given they both have to block and receive. That's why I'm a little skeptical of the Saints drafting a tight end in the first round.
Sam, looking at the coaching changes that the Saints have made, bringing on Brandon Staley, who's known for the 3-4 defense, the Saints will have to draft players that kind of fit that. And right now on their roster, they're really lacking that big nose tackle. I've been, you know, kind of questioning the draft decisions about trading up every year. It feels like this feels like a good spot to potentially trade down from pick 9, but I'm not holding my breath, so to speak, because Mickey Loomis never does it. But there's one kind of defensive tackle, I think, that in the first round that really could fill that nose tackle role. And it's someone that Mike and I have talked a lot about as far as someone that could blow up the combine. And that's Kenneth Grant, the big defensive tackle from Michigan. I want to get your thoughts on him and, you know, his potential fit with the Saints if they decide to maybe move back from pick 9, because I think it's maybe a little bit rich for him there. But I think he's going to have a great combine, and he's going to be obviously a first round pick.
Right. So Brandon Staley uses a system very similar to that of Vic Fangio. The whole idea is we're going to play pretty soft coverage and cut the deep plays off, which they were able to do so effectively in the Super Bowl. We saw Staley be able to do that in his time in LA as well. However, you know, the nose guard position is very key. They have filled that in Philadelphia, for example, with Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter too. Just massive, massive players. And I think you're correct. The name, as you were describing it, that popped up in my head was Kenneth Grant. The interesting thing in terms of the game theory of it all is I think the Chargers need a defensive tackle as well. Jim Harbaugh coached him. They're losing their two nose guards, Puna Ford and Tierre Tart. So if you are trading back, you got to be a little bit careful. Make sure you get a little bit above the Chargers if you want to get after Kenneth Grant. I saw Kenneth Grant at the Shrine Bowl. He didn't participate in drills or practice, but I can tell you he's a very big boy. And on film and in our analytics, he pops up as a difference maker. I think it's just going to be how is his size going to translate to the next level, and can he be a true three-down guy?
Looking at a guy that went to LSU, defensive end, outside linebacker, Braden Swinson, transferred from Oregon. And, man, last season with the Tigers really shocked everybody. 58 tackles, 13 tackles for loss, had 8.5 QB sacks. What are you expecting to see out of him at the combine, and where could he end up going in this NFL draft?
Yeah, so it's so interesting. This edge class is very packed in at the top of the draft. So you're talking about the guys like, starting with Abdul Carter, down to guys like Mike Green out of Marshall, there's a potential that 6+ edge rushers could go in the first round. And so it's going to be interesting for Swinson and some of these other edge rushing guys, because I think they could potentially move up into like a day 2 slot, maybe more of a day 3 slot, early day 3 slot, depending on how they do at some of these drills and moreover how they do at the interviews here. Now, I will note, when we're looking at the combine, typically it does not have a super great correlation with production. At best, typically at the tight end position, which we talked about a little bit, it's like 30% correlated to production at the next level. That's not too much. A lot of the teams use it more as thresholding of where to put guys and how productive they can be. But altogether, I think his stuff is on tape at LSU. Again, he also has transferred from another place. And I know the Los Angeles Rams, for example, put out a full line of guys who all transferred and were able to be successful at multiple different places. I think that's all going to go into his evaluation.
Sam, I'm really interested to see this week at the combine is Will Johnson. You know, the hip injury kind of held him out for a chunk of this past year, but the 2023 tape is fantastic. He's got kind of a shorter range of, like, cone of uncertainty of where he could potentially end up. Because, you know, at the peak, maybe it's around like pick 5 to Jacksonville because their secondary wasn't very good this past year. But it feels like the floor for him is at like pick 11 with San Francisco and the 49ers with their question marks with Tre'Varius Ward. You know, as I mentioned, his tape is fantastic from Michigan, the cornerback prospect that, you know, maybe the Saints could potentially target him in the first round because moving on from Marshon Lattimore. Just want to get your thoughts on him as well.
So it's interesting. We're talking about true defensive talent, talking about Brandon Staley and Vic Fangio. He's really been underneath NFL guys for a while. Basically, this year, Wink Martindale, many, many years in the NFL. The year prior to that, Jesse Minter had an excellent year with the Chargers. And those are more, you know, interesting systems and NFL-ready systems. I think people are going to take that into account. I'm really interested to see what he does at the combine. The thing that's interesting, and in fact, I'm sitting with former general manager John Idzik right now at dinner, and it's that there's a lot of cornerbacks in this draft, but outside of Travis Hunter, really, I'm not sure how many of them are going to be impact guys. And I'm trying to figure out who people are viewing as just a lock to be a guy like a Marshon Lattimore or to be a guy like a Sauce Gardner. It seems like people think that Will Johnson's ability to be very long, ability to make plays mixed with his ability that was shown under NFL defense coordinators has kind of separated him. But it'll be interesting to see how the draft falls, particularly with the pressure on the quarterback position to go up and get a quarterback for those teams that need it, and the edge rushing position where there could be a run pretty early in the first round. There's potential that he could drop. I currently have him going 6 to Pete Carroll and the Raiders. I think Pete Carroll has built all of his teams around a solid defensive backfield in my mock draft, which you can find on SoomerSports.com. But altogether, I think he's a good prospect, and I think people believe that he can come back from his hip injury that has put a measure of uncertainty into his projection.
Yeah, this corner class is kind of weird, Sam, because a lot of these top guys have that injury issue.
Right.
I mean, like Savon Ravel, for instance, from ECU has got the torn ACL, and then Benjamin Morrison from Notre Dame with, you know, the hip surgery and what's going to happen there with his physical. It's the what-if group of this class. But kind of moving on here, Sam, I wanted to ask you about one more prospect for the Saints at pick 9. I've seen him, you know, when it's not offensive or defensive line projected to the Saints at pick 9, I've seen this guy pop up a couple times, and Tyler Warren, I guess, also, but Teteroa McMillan, the big wide receiver from Arizona, interested to hear your thoughts on him. I've heard the comp with like Mike Evans and Drake London, that type of, you know, size and a true X receiver that the Saints are kind of missing in this offense.
Right, and I have currently Tet McMillan mocked to the Saints on SoomerSports.com. Here's my thinking behind that. You know, it seems to be Mickey Loomis talking at the combine today that Derek Carr will be coming back. And that offense was pretty tight in the first couple weeks. And when the wheels really fell off was when the wide receiver position went down. Olave with the multiple concussions and Shaheed, who was excellent, having a breakout year. Our analytics and our scouts both love him over here at Sumer Sports. And if you can add a third receiver, analytically, there's been some great research by my friend Eric Eager, who is with us at Sumer Sports and unfortunately is now at the rival Carolina Panthers. But, you know, I wish him the best a little bit anyway, though I may root against him twice a year. but he looked into the importance of having three wide receiver options. And I think that's really been a barrier to success for the Saints in recent years. And if they're really going to truly rebuild, and at some point Derek Carr is going to move on, given that he's a little bit older, he's a multi-year veteran, what better setup to do that other than to have some excellent young wide receivers? And I think if you can have three of those guys, Tet McMillan, Olave, and Shaheed, if they're able to stay healthy, that can maintain a level of offense that may be able to push the Saints back into the playoff contention that Mickey Loomis has done for so many years.
Sam, you mentioned that your mock draft is up right now at SoomerSports.com. What else can folks find on that website?
Yeah, so we have excellent tables. Obviously not updating anymore. We don't have any more games, but we have excellent tables if you want to go research it. Also, check out Sumer Brain. You know, people talk about ChatGPT and all this stuff, but when you ask it football question, it just doesn't know what it's talking about. We're training Sumer Brain to be an awesome fantasy guide and things that you just want to ask football questions. You can sign up for the waitlist now. Also, check me out, the Draft FM podcast. You can find it wherever. We'll be talking through all of this stuff. I talked about the news and notes to my mock draft. You can find a little bit more information about why I think Tet McMillan would be a good fit for the Saints and why they may make that move with their selection.
Sam, definitely appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of dinner, my man.
Appreciate it, guys. So glad to be back on WWL.
Thanks, Sam.
Sam Bruckhouse, former Tulane linebacker, Sumer Sports senior NFL analyst and data scientist. We got a scientist on the air with us today, Charlie.
He dropped some knowledge on us, that's for sure.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. We'll be right back getting into some audio from LSU baseball Stephen Milam right after this on WWL. Really looking forward to getting done with work today, because after we wrap up things at 7 o'clock on Sports Talk, we've got first pitch between LSU baseball and Dallas Baptist, a big test for the Tigers tonight, and in a major league park where the Texas Rangers call home in Arlington. We'll see the Tigers in action this evening. I know, Charlie, but it's an impressive park at least.
No, I do like the park. I've said that before.
The team, forget about.
No, I hate the Rangers. I'm an Astros fan. But I have been to Globe Life Field. I went and saw, I think it was a Joey Gallo bobblehead night back in like 2021 or something like that. It was right after the park had opened. Brand new park. Very nice. The AC in there is great, especially during the midsummer in Texas.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's a cool place to play, and I'm really looking forward to seeing them out there.
Some of the things we know about today's lineup: Luis Hernandez will be the catcher. Braswell back at third base. We got Curiel leading off. Jake Brown will be starting in right with Ashton Larson, the DH for this evening. And Monster Milam moves up to fifth in the order. Stephen Milam coming off that 5 RBI performance against Nichols in that victory. Hearing from him after the game, he talked about what's working for him at the plate right now.
Just getting back to the basics. Not the start I wanted, but you know, you can't keep a good hitter down forever. So, I mean, just staying positive, just trying to get back to who I am. And, I mean, eventually it'll go my way. And that's just kind of all I've been thinking about.
Talking about who he is, well, Stephen Milam's now playing shortstop this year. He played second last year for the Bayou Bengals, but made the switch back to shortstop, a position he's accustomed to. And how's it been this year for him?
It's been good. I mean, you play there your whole life. You kind of... It's like riding a bike to me, basically. That's where I wanted to play. I grew up trying to be at LSU shortstop. You know, you got Bregman, LeMahieu, Josh Smith, Kramer, all those guys. And, you know, now I'm one of them. So it's big shoes to fill, but that's what I wanted.
Milam was also asked what's been his focus for this season with the Bayou Bengals.
I would say just being consistent again. I mean, that's who I am and as a player, and staying positive. I know what I can and can't do, and Coach Johnson and, you know, Coach Wanaka do a good job with me, you know, getting me back to the basics when I'm off track and just being myself. I'm one of the best players in the country, and I know that, but you got to go out there and do that every day.
Tigers get to mix things up a little bit playing this game on the road. What is Milam like about playing away from the box?
It's fun. I like different environments. You know, I like hostile environments, I would say, playing against, you know. Our fans are going to travel. They'll be all there, but, you know, I like playing on the road, different environments, different stadium, you know. We got 3 different teams that, you know, we haven't played, so that's fun for me.
Yeah, Milam talking there about hostile environments. I don't know about tonight. We'll see. It is in Arlington. They're playing Dallas Baptist, but I know the Tiger faithful travels well, and curious to see how much purple and gold we see in the park tonight.
I'm excited to see how many people are actually out for a midweek college baseball game at Globe Life Field. Globe Life is a huge kind of capacity. It's an MLB park, right? I think it fills like 40,000 people. So, yeah, we'll see how many people are actually out at the ballpark tonight. But I like that kind of mentality from Stephen Milam. I like playing in the hostile environments. I like, you know, the booze, give it to me type of thing.
And kind of adds to your little juice, that, you know, pep to your step.
He's also one of the most clutch young hitters you'll see. Right. You remember how many clutch moments he had in his freshman year with LSU? And he talked about kind of the slow start, but you can't keep a good hitter down. And Stephen Milam's 100%
right
there.
Right, he's like, I know I'm good, so I'll be fine.
5 RBI performance against Nichols. The 3-run home run kind of highlighted that. He's been getting hot recently, and he's a key cog of this LSU offense. If Stephen Milam is hitting, and especially Jay kind of... You said he moved up in the lineup for tonight. He's now batting 5th in the order.
Yeah.
He's been batting kind of near the bottom for most of the season, around 8 or 9. And I think Jay likes having him down there. RBI opportunities for the guys in the middle of the order that get on base, but also kind of potentially setting the plate for the guys at the top of the order. And, you know, the humility to be able to kind of take that as well, like say, okay, I'll play my role, right? Yeah. If they want to play me near the bottom of the lineup, I'll still perform and perform at my best. So Stephen Milam, as I mentioned, huge fan of his game. We had a text that came in and said that he reminded him of like Jose Altuve, and they were like, I know that will make Charlie mad because he's an Astros fan, but no, I can see it, man. Like he's like the college baseball version of Jose Altuve. granted, the position change is also part of that, right? Like, Altuve is playing in, like, left field now, apparently, and Milam's switching over from second base to shortstop. But I also like what he was saying about it's like riding a bike because he played shortstop before. So,
looking forward to this matchup, too. The Tigers, you know, dropped that game to Omaha and then have been on a tear since losing. And we heard Jay Johnson say, you know, they've responded the right way, the team. And sometimes you kind of need that little nudge to help you out.
And they really were close to winning that game, despite the bats being ice cold.
It was awful,
right? For a majority of the game. They made that push in the ninth inning, and they came really close to picking up that W. But Jay said that it doesn't really matter unless you pick up the win, and they've had games like that in specifically the second weekend of the season every single year that he's been there. So hopefully they kind of cut that out for next season. But it's okay. It seems like it's kind of woken up LSU's bats a little bit the last few games, and we'll see if that keeps up tonight.
Major test tonight. Dallas Baptist on tap. A 7 o'clock first pitch coming up on WWL. We shall take a break and come back with more as we get ready for first pitch right after this on WWL. Wrapping things up here on Sports Talk. Tomorrow's show, we'll be breaking down the first day of workouts at the NFL Combine. Linebackers and D linemen. Which prospects impressed? Also, WWL TV sports director Doug Mouton will join us to share his insights on the Saints. We'll also talk to Pelicans basketball with NBA writer Ali Cosell. And at 7:30, coverage of the Pels' four-game Mardi Gras road trip starts against the Phoenix Suns. Tip-off 8 o'clock. And then they're going to be playing the Phoenix Suns back-to-back on this road trip. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to today's edition of Sports Talk. Coming up next, LSU baseball. Looking forward to this matchup against the tough and rough Dallas Baptist team. We'll see how the Tigers fare against a ranked opponent. Their first big test of the season. For Charlie Long, Mike Dettillier, I'm Steve Geller. Have a great night, everybody, and talk to you tomorrow. Who dat?